This week, we'll learn about a series of OSHA violations at the Selfridge Air National Guard Base with AFGE DOD Local 2077 President John Siminski. We'll also discuss what the middle class can expect from the economy in 2014 with Economic Policy Institute Research and Policy Director Josh Bivens. But first, we've been joined by AFGE National Council of SSA Field Operations Locals President Witold Skwierczynski. Witold, welcome back.
Glad to be here, Jason.
Witold, as we begin 2014, your members are dealing with some leftover issues from 2013, starting with some issues around the government shutdown and management's refusal to work with the union. Is that right?
Yeah, well, when the shutdown occurred, much to our surprise, the agency decided that part of the shutdown would be to shut down the union. And let me explain. We had in Social Security, most of the workforce stayed on the job. They were declared essential. About two-thirds of the workforce was declared essential. The 800 numbers stayed open. All our field offices stayed open. Our processing centers stayed open. They closed much of the hearings office operation. The judges kept working, but all the support staff was furloughed. And staffing components were furloughed. So in previous furloughs, you know, the union kept operating, and there's certainly a number of issues. But, what the agency does is their lawyers sit down and decide what essential activities the agency can continue to do. You know, it's a situation of no funding and what we can't do. So they decided the things that we can do are claims and claims-related activity. So things like getting a Social Security number, getting a benefit estimate, dealing with somebody's overpayment, doing integrity work, all that was declared non-essential, and the people who did that were furloughed. And the people who did multiple tasks were told they can't do that, they just have to do claims-related activity. So that created a lot of changes in the way work was distributed and how work was managed. And normally, the union has involvement in that. Also, they canceled all leave because there was no such thing as leave during a furlough because we weren't getting paid. So they came up with new rules on how people would get off work, say if they had an emergency or an illness or hospitalization or a family situation that required them to not be at work. And essentially, the agency created all new rules on how that would operate, and they refused to deal with the union on any of that. They unilaterally implemented all their procedures on work distribution, rules changes, who worked and who didn't, and the impact of that. And they shut the union down by ordering all union officials to either be furloughed, which is one thing, but the ones who were working to go back to their desks and eliminated all official time. So they decided that our contract was not in effect during the furlough period. They didn't follow much of it, and they refused to deal with the union, not only on contractual issues, but on legal issues such as, you know, Weingarten discussions, formal discussions, which are required by the contract that individuals have a right to have union representative present. And so that's created all kinds of problems since then and lots of litigation. Interestingly enough, about 10 days before the furlough, we actually had a very constructive week of meetings off-site with the agency in West Virginia on our forums, and had a very good week where we tried to resolve a lot of our communication disagreements. It was a relationship training, and we got to know each other better and laid the groundwork for a better relationship. And unfortunately, 10 days later, we had a furlough, and the agency took this weird and bizarre interpretation of the Anti-Deficiency Act and said the union can't function, which, interestingly enough, in previous furloughs, there have been many of them, not lately, but back in the 80s and 90s, there were a significant number of furloughs. They never took that attitude, and the union continued to function in those previous furloughs.
Witold, I'm wondering, this unilateral decision here. Did that violate your contract at all? Did you have any legal concerns about that?
Yeah, I think our contract was violated in a number of ways. We filed 13 grievances. We filed a number of unfair labor practice charges because of their action. They have now agreed. This all would have been managed a lot better if the agency had prepared for the furlough. In advance of the furlough, we made numerous requests with them to try to get some information about their furlough plan. We requested bargaining in advance of the furloughs on the way the agency would implement a furlough if it happened. They refused, saying, you know, they don't have a plan. So if they had done that, a lot of this could have been avoided, I think. Now we're doing it post-implementation. Now we're saying, well, you know, there's always a possibility of furloughs, and the way Congress is dysfunctional, you know, there's another debt ceiling crisis that we're looking at in February, and in the future, you know, future budget cycles, furloughs may very well happen. So we started in December. We had a two-week negotiating session on how furloughs would operate in the future. We didn't reach agreement. We're going back together the first week of February, and hopefully we'll lay out some ground rules on what will happen in the future.
Vitold, what was the reaction of your members knowing at that time that essentially their union was not able to operate?
Well, we got a lot of requests for representational services that we couldn't honor. People became very frustrated, were seeking our services. They were, it became difficult for the union to communicate with the membership because we didn't have, you know, any time or staff support during this shutdown period. So people thought the union wasn't engaged in trying to assist them. So, you know, they did kind of hurt us in terms of our relationship with the workforce.
How do you feel things stand today? Do you feel that you were able to explain to your members what was going on at that time, and how do they feel about it now?
Yeah, we've communicated with them since, and I think they understand the situation. And we have had a history of asking them to help themselves and have public events protesting the failure of Congress to pass budgets, tendency of Congress to move from crisis to crisis. And we've had, you know, protest days about these kinds of issues in the past, where we've had a lot of our folks have been out. So they understand the union's role in this, and they're the need for them to participate. But it's just puzzling. You know, what I really don't understand is in an Obama administration and with a Democrat acting commissioner, why they would take off after the union during this furlough. I just don't, we don't fully understand that, and we're very disappointed.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Vitold Skirchinsky, the president of AFGE's National Council of SSA Field Operations Locals. Vitold, on that point, have you been able to discuss this at all with Carolyn Colvin, the acting commissioner?
Yeah, we had a meeting with her right after the furloughs in November, and she defended her position, and it has clearly... our relationship has suffered because of, you know, her actions during the furlough situation. You see, the agency decided that union activity violates the Anti-Deficiency Act. And, you know, we disagree with that, strongly disagree with that. That's not their past practice. And other agencies didn't do that. Other agencies did not treat their unions in the same way. SSA stands out like a sore thumb compared to the rest of the government. So I think they misinterpreted the Anti-Deficiency Act. There was no need for them to take the actions that they did. And I'll tell you what happened. What's very disappointing also is a lot of employees, especially in the field, were ordered to work under the pain of being on AWOL. And so we had numerous employees who were put in very bad situations. People who had medical issues, they were threatened by some managers and some offices that if they didn't go to work, they'd be put on AWOL. So people came in sick. People missed medical appointments. People missed family events. People, because of threats for AWOL, which leads to disciplinary action, canceled appointments they had for their children, for medical treatment, even surgeries. People canceled vacations that they had planned and they had approved time for, which was once the furlough hit, they were told if they didn't show up for work, they would be put on AWOL and potentially disciplined. So there was a lot of bad feeling generated in some places. This isn't universal, but in many places, and managers decided that they're going to be very strict in the interpretation of the requirements for people to be at work, even though they weren't getting paid. See, there was no guarantee that anyone who was working during this period would ever get paid. They certainly were getting paid while they were working. A lot of, you know, everyone missed about, had a delay of about 2 weeks in their paycheck, which also caused a lot of problems. A lot of our workers are living from paycheck to paycheck, and some people had to borrow money to pay their rent. Some people, I know one person who had their car possessed because they couldn't make a car payment because they weren't getting paid during the furlough. So this caused a lot of chaos, and taking the union out of the picture and making it extremely difficult for us to represent people just exacerbated the problem.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll continue with Witold Skwierczynski, president of AFGE's National Council of SSA Field Operations Locals.